Hey creeps, it's Laura, and with me tonight I have my two amazing co-hosts, Tanya and Trina.
Hi.
Hi folks.
Trina, who do we have on tonight?
Tonight we have author extraordinaire John LeMay here to talk with us and answer some questions about his books and his work and all of that good stuff. How are you doing tonight, John?
I'm doing great. I just hope I can remember all the answers to your questions. It's hard to keep it straight.
So, John, you said you've written over 40 books. Can you tell us what, you know, they're all about? Like, just the general...
Sure. Yeah. So what I started with wouldn't have really been too applicable to this podcast because it was just a basic, you know, Roswell history book. That's where I live, you know, the town where the aliens crashed. I'm sure most people, if they know who I am, they know that by now. But yeah, it was just a basic town history. And I think my first few books were, you know, things like Billy the Kid, just New Mexico stuff. And then eventually I started to get into ufology, obviously. And I would write or co-write the series of books with Noe Torres based out of Edinburgh, Texas. And so we've carved a neat little niche called The Real Cowboys and Aliens, which is all about, you know, historical newspaper articles that deal with UFOs before UFOs were really known in the public conscious. And I also do books about cryptids and cryptozoology. I also do film history. Those are probably my best sellers. And so a lot of different stuff. So basically, again, you know, just paranormal, UFO, cryptozoology, film history, and then regular Southwest history.
So have you always been interested in historical facts and stories since you're little? Or was that something that you just, that just happened over time?
Yeah, absolutely. When I was little, I liked to read the books by Daniel Cohen, who was a paranormal author, probably back in the 70s and the 80s. I loved his stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I think as an adult, I definitely try to emulate people like him and Lauren Coleman. And yes, because that's the sort of stuff I've always enjoyed reading. And I guess it's my rule. I write what I want to read.
That's good. Yeah.
It's a good rule.
That is good. Yeah.
Oh, so how did you get interested in the paranormal? Is it just because of where you lived and just UFOs are just all around you? Or
I think where I live actually does. I think I would have been interested in it regardless. And the UFOs I saw so much of, they were almost a turnoff to me. And that's why I think I gravitated more towards the mystery creatures, the cryptids like Sasquatch, and remnant dinosaurs. That's definitely more of my interest, because I think anybody when they're a kid and they grow up with stuff like that in their face all the time, in this case aliens, you know, it's kind of just commonplace for them.
That's true. I didn't think about that. Since you're there, it's like not a big deal.
Yeah. Get the goddamn aliens out of my face.
Have you been past, because I know nothing about Roswell, have you been past the place where the aliens are supposed to be and you can't go in and all of that?
Yeah, I've been there twice. Me and Noe Torres went together. It's basically just a big stretch of prairie out in Corona. It's not quite what they would have you believe in the movies, where it's like a desert with saguaro cactus and all that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, where the craft exploded over, it's just a prairie with prairie grass out in a little town called Corona, New Mexico. And it gets confusing because the idea is that lightning struck the UFO over Corona, rained down a big old bunch of debris over this sheepman's ranch. But then the main body of the craft, it kept flying south towards Roswell. And that's where the main body of the flying saucer touched down, was about 35 miles north of Roswell, whereas Corona, I think, is about 70 miles north of Roswell or so. And okay. So that's why so many people get confused about this Corona Roswell thing. So Yeah, short version, the debris is in Corona, the main craft or fuselage, whatever you want to call it, that was closer to Roswell.
Oh, okay. And it really is a military base you can't go into then.
Yeah, and so the military base here was gone by the year 1967. And a lot of people do, yeah, they do tend to confuse us with Area 51 sometimes in Nevada. But yeah, no more military presence here in Roswell in terms of the Air Force, really.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I guess I would have confused that too between Area 51 and Roswell.
Yeah, you kind of just like lump them all together.
Yeah, you think they're just right there together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, that's cool to know. So what is your favorite topic to write about? You had said that like more of the not alien stuff. You write a lot about cryptids.
Yeah, you know, like all kids, I love dinosaurs, which also you know, kind of progressed into a love of like Godzilla movies. So books about Godzilla movies are probably, again, some of my biggest sellers. And then second to them are the cryptid books with the dinosaurs, which actually tend to outsell the UFO books, believe it or not.
Oh, okay. Well, dinosaurs are very cool. I like dinosaurs.
So not that people listening can see, but like I did get some in case I have to reference them. But like you all have probably seen them, like these.
Yeah.
I have seen that. Yeah.
So what's your definition of a saurian? Because I know I would think dinosaur, but I know you have like other prehistoric creatures that you write about.
So saurian is just this really antiquated term that could mean any type of big reptile, basically.
Okay.
And also, I mean, something that people don't know is back in like the medieval times, if you called something a serpent, that could be like a crocodile, a snake, anything. So, you know, how words, they kind of change their meanings over time.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. Oh, okay. Well, what's your favorite dinosaur?
Definitely one of the big carnivorous theropods, but I don't know which one, you know. Something like a, I take that back. It's probably a plesiosaurus.
Oh, I think
those are really scary, and those tend to be the ones that people allegedly still see.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Living dinosaurs are a big thing right now. Like, I mean, dinosaur sightings, all of it, it's huge right now. I mean, more so than Bigfoot at this point. I've noticed and everything that I've seen coming across my news and coming across from my friends and whatnot. Just weird how that stuff kind of cycles, you know?
So my mom in 1976, we grew up in Texas. That's where I'm from. And she had seen a pterodactyl swoop over her and just glide off into the tree line in front of them. And I actually spoke at the Van Meter Festival in Iowa, and I talked about, you know, pterosaur sightings. And it's just crazy how many people have seen these. Like, you would not think that. But there's like a sighting, like there's a couple sightings like every month, like all over the world.
That's crazy.
So that's very, I just had to say that's very fortuitous, because this morning I spent the entire morning writing about what you just talked about, the Texas Big Bird flap of 76.
Yep.
And, so do you ever give your mom's name, or is she private about that? Or,
I mean, there's really not much to the story, I don't know if I gave my mom's name, but I'm sure it's pretty easy to look up.
I'm mostly curious if she was in the newspapers. And
No, she wasn't in the newspapers. Okay,
so she's an undocumented sighting, so that's cool.
Yeah.
Because I'd heard lots of people saw it. So I this morning I was kind of looking at it through the lens more of Mothman and like supernatural type stuff. Because some of those big bird sightings, it didn't have a beak and it had glowing red eyes and
it looked more like a gorilla face.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Do you have stories about that in your books?
So I did one that just came out. You know, typically the cowboys and saurians books, obviously they gravitate towards the really old stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some new cases I really liked, and that 76 big bird flap was one of them.
Yeah.
So that book, it just came out. It's called Cowboys and Saurians in the Modern Era.
Oh, okay.
So I haven't really advertised that one yet. I guess this is the first podcast where I've talked about it, actually. And like you can see.
Oh, nice.
You know, it's got not for resale. And, yeah. Yeah, the biggest chapter in the book is actually on that Pterosaur flap of 76, though.
Okay, cool. Is that book out?
It just came out a few days ago. So, yeah.
Can you get on Amazon or?
Yeah, everything. I just sell through Amazon. That's easier for me than trying to sell them myself. So I really like Amazon's self-publishing model. It's great.
Okay.
It's a really great model for independent writers to get read, whereas that was super hard before. You know, that's the one. As much as I hate Amazon for whatever reasons, that part of it, the Kindle and all of that, it allows for a lot of exposure for authors that would back even 10 years ago not get the time of day. Mm-hmm. You know, so I like that part of it a lot, and I'm glad that it's working for you. That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. And like with real publishers, you know, I started out with real publishers. I make about $1 a copy sold. But with Amazon, you know, maybe $5 or so it's great.
Good.
So thank it you. Lets you self-publish then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's cool. That's cool. I know somebody who's trying to write a book right now and that I had mentioned Kickstarter, and but that seems like a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is free. It's totally free. They'll give you an ISBN and everything. So it's so good, they're bound to screw it up one day because it works way too good.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And but now doing it that way, can you only sell it through Amazon?
So there's a fairly complicated way of doing it where you buy your own ISBNs.
Right.
Because you can do that. And what you do is you publish through Amazon and Ingram both. And Ingram's kind of like, you know, the biggest wholesale book distributor in the U.S. So to reach brick and mortar stores, you know, that's why you'd go with Ingram. So, yeah, you can. And it all works pretty good. I've actually seen retailers order my books from Ingram. So it's not like a scam or something.
Mm.
That's pretty cool. That must feel good to have.
Yeah.
So, John, have you had any weird experiences yourself? Have you seen anything in the skies or?
It's a really boring story. You know, to me, routine UFO sightings are pretty boring. But yeah, I mean, I saw the bright light once that just ascended way too quickly into the stars, you know, so it wasn't an airplane or a helicopter or something. But, you know, I mean, I would much rather see a dinosaur for sure.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
Far away. But yeah.
Right, not up right next to me, but like
right.
Just,
no, I don't want to like that one or anything. Yeah. But you know, the aliens seem like to you they might be boring, but to everybody else, that's like you know, especially to like a lot of people who just love UFOs, that would be amazing that you see stuff like that. I'm scared of aliens. I don't want to see one. I know
am
a lot
too,
of people
yeah.
do. I don't want to see one at all.
I
don't
think
want to see a ship. Nothing.
I think those little alien grays are scarier than like the aliens from the movie Alien to me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
They're so creepy and they're little, like little kids. And
yeah.
Yeah. I don't.
Yeah. I mean, I want to see a UFO just because I've never seen one. But at the same time, again, I've said it a million times, I don't ever want to meet an alien.
Right.
No, not at all. No. So have you had any ghost encounters or anything like that? Or is it just all pretty much aliens and stuff like that?
If I'd had one, I bet I'd remember. So probably not, because I'm sitting here thinking, like, have I? But I'm like, no, if I had, I'm sure I'd remember.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It would be memorable.
Are you more on the skeptical side of things?
No, I totally believe in the dinosaurs, the aliens, all
okay.
of it. Yeah.
See, like our co-host would say that these dinosaurs, Walter, he would say these dinosaur sightings are time slips.
Yeah, he would.
It's his theory for the living dinosaur sightings. It's their time
yes,
slipping.
Would be time
either
slips.
The dinosaurs time slipping or we're time slipping. Somebody's time slipping, though. I kind of like
yeah.
the, you know.
That makes sense to me, too. I think that's a possibility. So,
mm-hmm. I like it. I think it's a good one.
That would explain the Loch Ness Monster
right.
too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've written so many books. Do you ever feel like you're going to run out of a topic to write about?
No, so when I first started doing these cowboy and dinosaur books, I had only intended to do one. And I just dug up so many articles through like newspaper.com and newspaperarchive.com. I just started filing them away and kind of doing subcategories. That's why The second book is all Ice Age animals. And the third book is all like southern areas. Because there's just so many of those stories. So I've still got like 3 books worth of more newspaper articles to flesh out. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Is there a favorite time period that you like, that you prefer to write about?
Probably like the 1880s, just because that's that was really interesting for New Mexico. It doesn't have anything to do with the dinosaurs, but just that that was just when my town, Roswell, really kind of came alive. And that's when Billy the Kid was, you know, out riding the ranges and all that. So that's the only reason, I guess, that the 1880s would be my favorite.
Yeah, that would be the most interesting cowboy type times, I would think, would be then. And you said you have a book about southern swamps and stuff like that. Do you mean the southern United States, or do you
mean? Yes, ma'am. Yeah, southern United States. Yeah, and I've got it right here. And I put the lizard man on the cover of this one, so that's supposed to be the lizard man.
Oh, that is a scary lizard man.
Yeah.
That is very scary looking lizard man. Do you do your own artwork, or does somebody else?
Oh,
do it
I wish
for you?
I could. I mean, that would save me so much money. Not that my artists are totally worth it. I've got two that I use. Jolien Yates does the Cowboys and Saurians books, and then I've got Logan Pack here in Roswell does the covers of my novels and stuff. And
oh, okay.
Both great artists.
That's some good artwork on there. That's why I asked.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I do too.
So do you plan on doing a Cowboy and Bigfoot book? I don't think you've done one of those yet, right?
I probably will. The only thing I feel bad about that one is I think Chad Lewis has already done a really good one, so there's no need.
Nah.
I mean, I think it was Chad Lewis. I mean, sometimes I mix up people's names. I'm pretty sure it was. Because there's Chad Arment, and then there's Chad Lewis. So I think it was Chad Lewis.
Lewis has done a lot of books too, so
yeah.
He's got a
Yeah, so I mean,
I remember he's done it.
Yeah, I might just do it for the sake of completion. But I mean, yeah, I mean, for anybody listening that's interested in like historical Bigfoot, that's literally, I think, the name of Chad's book, and it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, I have not seen that. I've not read a lot of Chad's books, but the ones I've read I really like, but I haven't read that one at all. But yeah, the historical Bigfoot stuff would be really interesting. Because I think Bigfoot itself lends itself to the Native American type stuff. At least I do. That's my belief. And so I think that would be really cool. Really something neat to research. So you need to get on that.
Yeah, I collected the articles at least. They're collected. And then my friend's mom loves Bigfoot. So I have to write the book partly just so I can dedicate it to her. Because I dedicated one of the books to my friend's dad. So
That
would be cool. That would
only
be really
fair.
Cool. Yeah.
Right.
And you said you did this full time.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, the royalties on one book is nothing. And even the royalties on 40 is still pretty slim. So it's kind of like I barely get by, but I, you know, have a flexible schedule. I get to do what I love. So it's nice. Yeah.
Right.
That would be nice. That would be worth kind of just getting by with being able to do what you like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If I could make money doing what I love, that fucking diner would never see me again. They could tune in once a week and listen to me, but they would never see me again.
Yeah, I would never do another accounting thing again if I, I wanted to.
I mean, I make excellent money and it pays the bills, but I'll tell you what, if I could make real money just chatting with people and doing what I do, they'd never ever see me.
Yeah, right.
I'd stay in the group chat just to mess with people, but yeah, they'd never see me.
So you've written books about monsters too. Like, tell us about those.
Yeah. Just, so again, you know, I only plan on those. So the evolution of that whole thing was first, you know, I did real cowboys and aliens with Noe Torres.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just to cash in on the movie Cowboys and Aliens back in 2011.
Tanya
was wondering about that,
Oh, yeah. No coincidence there. super successful book that Noe and I did, you know, back in 2011. And so I always thought, well, there's dinosaurs too. How to do that, you know. So then I started researching that. Then by accident, I would stumble across similar articles, only it would be vampires or dogmen, werewolves. And again, I just found enough material to do books on those as well. And those might be my favorite because they just get so into folklore. Mm-hmm. And I'm really intrigued by folklore and the truth that is steeped in folklore somewhere. Because mm-hmm. I think
there's a truth in those stories somewhere, mm-hmm. you know, and it's fun to see if you can kind of figure out maybe how that story evolved and became right. what it is, you know. Mm-hmm. I understand
that one. Well, something I really hate about our academic environment today is they tend to look at the older cultures like they were stupid. It's like, well, it couldn't possibly have been true. They were, you know, they had these silly beliefs. And I'm like, well, maybe there was actually a reason.
You right. know? Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't get us on our ancient aliens rant.
Yeah.
Here. So what's your favorite monster movie?
Well, like I said, I love Godzilla movies, you know, mm-hmm. Japanese giant monsters. You know, so we've been talking about cryptozoology a lot and plesiosaurs and pterodactyls. There's a really good one from Japan that is basically a cryptozoology horror movie from the 70s. It's called Legend of the Dinosaurs.
Okay.
And it's basically, you can tell they wrote this screenplay based off of like real cryptid encounters, because it's all about a plesiosaur in a lake that fights a pterodactyl, which I just thought was interesting, you know, because those are the two most commonly seen dinosaur
cryptids.
Right.
So that's probably my favorite monster movie. So 1976 or 77, Legend of the Dinosaurs.
I'm going to have to look that up.
I know.
Have you ever run across an article, an older newspaper article and all of that, that has stuck out in your mind? Like, has just, no matter what you've done, like, this article has stayed in your mind. Do you have one like that? Or a story?
So there's very few, I would say, that I've found, like, I found them. I mean, Jerome Clark found so many of them. And then, again, there's Chad Lewis and Chad Arment and Nick Sukic and guys like that that dug up a lot of these stories. And I think it was Nick Sukic. I hope I'm saying his name right. I only see it spelled out. I never say it or hear it pronounced.
Right.
He's the mini dinosaur guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure it was him that dug up this article from Crosswicks, Ohio, back in the 1880s about basically a theropod type carnivorous dinosaur that attacked a young boy and drug him off and killed him.
Oh wow.
So it's like, you know, again, it's the newspaper article would seem to tell a real story. And I talked to the Crosswicks Historical Society, and they're really nice over there. They gave me a drawing that somebody did of the creature. But I think that one's the one that really intrigues me, just because, you know, somebody actually died in the story, and it's kind of like a horror story.
Yeah,
and it's a kid. You said it was a kid.
Kid.
Even worse.
Oh, right. Yeah, the kids always get you.
Yeah. Kids and dogs. Yes, especially dogs. Yeah.
Yeah, dogs. Yeah. Dogs. Me too.
I think dogs are worse than kids, honestly.
Yeah. I do too.
Dog in a scary movie, you're like, oh my god.
Please don't let it die. Yeah. The grown-ups, the regular people, no, I don't care.
Yeah, whatever. Adults, whatever.
Puppies, and you're like, oh please, I didn't know it was this kind of movie when I started.
Right. Yeah. That's why I have to get Walter, you know, when we do movies, he watches them first and tells me if there's any animals, or he'll say, okay, you got to skip here to here because there's an animal death in it. So, yeah.
Can you tell us like a story or two from like New Mexico that, you know, you find intriguing, like a local legend or, you know?
Right now, I'm doing a book on like the colonial, like Spanish colonial era witches of New Mexico. And it actually, though, I say colonial era. Yeah, it actually extended all the way up until the 1940s. And this one is really fascinating. There's a little mountain village called Mora. And I was reading the newspaper articles, and this man in Mora actually got arrested and put on trial for turning into a frog and biting his wife, because he was like a wizard. And I mean, it's all in the court documents and the newspapers.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, again, this is the year 1940. You have a state police official actually being quoted in the papers about this man and his wife, you know, claiming he turned into a frog and did these things. And the villagers all believed that he was this all-powerful wizard who could hex them.
Oh, wow.
And it's the ending of the story is kind of comical as he's on trial in front of the judge. And the judge, you know, again, this is 1940. He's an old man from the mountains, you know, rural population. The judge set $1,000 bail for him just because he figured, well, he can't pay that. And
right.
The articles really say that this old man whipped out a big stack of bills of hundreds and counted them off and basically did his own bail right there on the spot.
Oh, wow.
And they figured out that this guy had kind of like how the mob had a protection racket. You know how you pay the mob not to destroy mm-hmm. your business? Well, the
yes.
villagers, yeah, the villagers would pay this old man not to hex them. So he had a protection. Yes.
Trina, you're
doing it wrong this whole goddamn time.
I know.
I know. There you go.
So I thought that one, in terms of New Mexico, I thought that one was pretty interesting.
That is interesting. Yeah. I love that. And you said that's in the book that you're writing now? Or
yeah, right now. Yeah. So it probably won't come out till summer, fall, something in there.
Right.
Oh, okay. Oh, that is so cool. I like that.
I know. It's a good one.
I was just going to say, you know, you were talking about how they say that people, or you said that the academia says that people back then couldn't be smart because they were, you know, superstitious and all that. But if you take away our technology and stuff, I mean, they might have been seeing and believing and understanding things that we don't because we pay attention to like television or computers or whatever. And that keeps us from maybe seeing the stuff that they saw or believing the stuff that they saw or, you know, believed.
Yeah.
So I agree with you on that, sometimes they think the people were stupid back then, and they weren't. They were probably smarter and closer to nature than we are.
Yeah.
If we've learned anything these last few years, is we're not as smart as we think we are.
Yeah.
Not at all.
I have no faith in this nation's intelligence anymore.
No. We might be better off with dinosaurs and aliens.
Right.
I don't know, man.
So, John, if you could make any of your books into a big budget film, which one would you pick?
Well, for a film, I definitely have to pick one of the novels. I've only done two, but, you know, I live in Billy the Kid country.
Mm-hmm.
He's a big deal here. He's really bigger than the aliens. I'm not even sure why people love him so much. I mean, obviously, I would love him. I live in New Mexico, but I don't I don't always understand what the big appeal is with him necessarily. But everybody across all of America just is crazy about Billy the Kid. But
yeah,
so my family is kind of from Fort Sumner, where he got shot, and he and his grave is in Fort Sumner. He has a tombstone there, and it's been stolen like two or three times, which is interesting. And one of the times it got stolen, it was stolen shortly after a visit from this old man in 1950 who claimed he was Billy the Kid.
I've heard about that guy who said he was Billy the Kid.
And so then this tombstone is missing for about 26 years. They find it in a Texas town very near to where this old man lived and died, which is just coincidence. But I mean, it had the makings of a great story, you know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So I have a novel called The Noted Desperado, Pancho Dumez, which is about a teenage boy that steals the tombstone when it gets returned to Fort Sumner. And he finally learns like that there's something hidden inside of it. And that's why so many people were stealing it over the years.
Oh, and that's interesting.
Yeah. That's good.
Then I have another one in this that's like a sequel called Once Upon a Time in Fort Sumner, which has like a skinwalker in it, some supernatural stuff. So,
oh, that's cool. I was going to ask if you had done anything about skinwalkers or anything like that. That's pretty cool. I like the skinwalker stuff.
Yeah, I'm definitely fascinated by them and just how they're not exactly werewolves, you know, but people kind of lump them in with that, but they're, yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty creepy. Very creepy.
Yeah.
You were talking about Billy the Kid, and I don't know, I'm not sure how old you are, but you look pretty young. What was the movie with Emilio Estevez that played Billy the Kid? You know, Trina.
Young Guns.
Young Guns. I was like, I'm okay, I look at somebody near my age. But, you know, at the end of that movie, there was an old man that was sitting there, and he was supposed to be Billy the Kid, you know. So I guess they took that from the guy in the 50s, because I had heard about him as well,
saying
that
correct.
He was Billy the Kid. So, yeah, I love that movie. And it's funny, anytime anybody says Billy the Kid, I think Emilio Estevez.
Yeah.
Every time, not Billy the Kid, I think of Emilio Estevez.
I love you so much, man.
That's who I picture.
Yeah. Trina, did you have any other questions for him? Otherwise, I was going to do rapid fire.
I think I covered what I wanted to know, because I asked about the time period. I asked about, like, the favorite story. That's the stuff I always find interesting, like the stuff that jumps out at you, like, was there something? Because I know when I read past stuff, especially old newspaper articles, every once in a while I come across one and I'm like, what in the actual fuck is that? Because the way they reported was so nonchalant that you're like, what was it? What was it? Right. Is it a follow-up? Right. I mean, come on, man. So,
right, you know. Right.
Do you just find all your articles online, or are you actually, like, going into libraries and, like, digging up books and, like, actually meeting with people?
I've said a couple of times, I really respect Jerome Clark, who dug up a lot of these the first time, just because I know he had to do the microfiche and the actual newspaper.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I do a volunteer at a local archive here in town. So, I mean, I don't get those articles from there, but I mean, I do actually handle the old newspapers that'll make you sneeze and are dirty. And before the age of newspaper.com, I did go to the Roswell Public Library and look at their microfiche from, like, 1947 to see, like, what other UFO stories there were that just nobody else ever reported on. So I have done that before, but, like, now I'm super spoiled because it's, like you said, it's just newspaperarchive.com. I have they call it OCR software, original character recognizer. So it'll just, like, scan even the old typeface. So that's like, I don't have to arduously, like, retype it. It just rips it off for me.
Okay.
Oh, wow. So I can,
reprint the old article and then, do some commentary on it. So it makes it really easy. And that's one reason why those particular books with the newspaper articles are so quick. You know, a lot of the text is just reprints.
Right.
That makes sense. That's really cool. I like that.
Technology.
Yes.
Blessing and a curse.
Yes. Yeah. Very much so. You said you like skinwalkers. How about Wendigos?
So I think just because New Mexico, I don't think has any Wendigos that I'm aware of. I mean, we probably do, but it just seems more like of a northern type thing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I probably would be.
Yeah, those are really creepy to me. I like any of the Native American stuff. And those are definitely Native American. Sounds a skinwalker, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're from Native American.
Yeah, so those are predominantly Navajo. I think Navajo is the only, like, tribe that really has skinwalkers that I understand. Because, like, we also have the Apache here. And the Apache don't really do skinwalker type stuff or... but all of the New Mexico witches, though, I'll say this, all of the New Mexico witches can turn into, like, owls, dogs, whatever, but it's just the skinwalker. I guess what makes them unique is that, you know, they wear the certain animal pelt and they, you know, it, like, melds to their skin or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. So I guess there is a big Native American culture there. I mean, I know there is, but that would be really interesting.
Yeah, and, you know, something I like to do is some people don't really question how the magic works. I mean, like, they're either skeptical of it or they just take it and that's it. You know, I like to kind of question how it works, you know, because a lot of these witch stories from New Mexico has them, like, they'll say they transform into an owl to spy on somebody, and then, you know, a rancher will shoot the owl in the leg, and then the next day he'll see the old lady that he thought was a witch with, like, a leg. But, like, I treat him like, what if this is real? Like, so, like, how about this? Maybe the witch projects her spirit into the owl. She doesn't actually transform into an owl, but she just projects her spirit into it and kind of possesses it. And, like, I mean, I just never see anybody actually try to figure out the mechanics of this stuff. It's either, it's not real, or it's just, that's the way it is. So I'm trying
just
to
take it at face value.
Yeah.
So my grandfather, I was told, was a Mexican witch doctor, and he had seen a bunch of La Lechuzas, which is, you know, an old lady witch who sold her soul to the devil and turns into an owl. That just fascinates me. But yeah, that just reminded me of all that.
Well, I might have to, I might have to send you an email before I finish that that book, though, because you might have some interesting stuff. So,
yeah, I have a couple stories from like my family about that. So, all right, you ready for some rapid fire questions?
Probably won't be rapid fire answers, but we'll
see. That's all right. What is your favorite breakfast food?
I don't really eat breakfast. I just have black coffee and then I wait till lunch.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Trina's like, yep. Who was your first celebrity crush?
Probably Jessica Biel on Seventh Heaven.
I forgot about that.
Okay. Yeah.
So that gives you my age range. No, I take that back. No, it was Terry Hatcher on Lois and Clark. That was it for sure.
Oh, she's so pretty.
Yeah, definitely Terry Hatcher, Lois and Clark.
Okay.
Yeah, she's so pretty.
What world record do you think you have a chance at beating?
None of them.
What is your go-to like song to get you motivated and pumped up?
It usually changes every year. It's I'm not good about sticking with just one. It's like every year the rotation shifts.
Okay. Yeah. So what are you listening to now?
Listen to a little bit of everything. What's that song, Detroit City from Kiss? That one's pretty good.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That was before you were born, I'm sure. Yeah. 'Cause I was like in kindergarten, I think.
Yeah. That's an older one.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a good one though.
Yeah.
And it was in the one movie. Wasn't that the name of the movie? Detroit Rock City?
Yeah.
That was a good movie. I know I'm probably butchering the name.
No, that was it.
Was it?
Okay. That was like with Edward Furlong, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They were also in a movie where they were in a haunted amusement park. You have to remember it, Trina. Yeah, but they probably don't remember it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't remember that at all.
John, what movie do you enjoy quoting the most?
Quoting the most. See, I'm so bad. My recall time is so slow. I'll think of it like 10 minutes later. I mean, I would say my favorite movie is Goodwill Hunting, but I don't really quote it a lot.
Okay.
I probably quote something like Step Brothers or something a lot.
I was going to say Step Brothers.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any questions for John?
There's two that always get weird reactions. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Well, I could see why you say that. I feel like if the bread slices separate, it's more of a sandwich than if they're still together. Then it's more like a submarine sandwich or something, I guess.
That's what the Holocaust Sky guys were saying too.
Yeah.
That it's because the bread wouldn't slice. And then the other one is toilet paper over or under, or does it matter?
I don't think it matters. I think over is probably better.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I'll actually flip it over if somebody has it the other way.
As long as it gets the job done.
Yeah. It's got to be over for me. But no, that's all of them I have, I think. Yeah.
John, where can people find you?
On Facebook, but if you just want like a nice concise listing of my books or something, you know, you just type in my name on Amazon. And then I really regret my publisher name at this point because it was just something I made up on a whim. I didn't know I'd have to stick with it forever, but it was kind of a joke. But all of my books, you can find them on bicepbooks.com.
Why did you pick that name?
At the time, this was not a nickname I gave myself. This is what my friends called me, Bicep John, at the time. And so I thought they would all think it was funny if I named my book company Bicep Books.
Is there something extraordinary about your biceps? What are we missing here?
They used to be. That was like 6 years ago. Not as extraordinary now.
The gun show? Is that what's going on?
Yeah.
John, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. We appreciate it.
I enjoyed it.
Yes, you know, it was like fun.
6 months or a year from now, if y'all want to have me back, I'm down. I'll have new stuff to talk about. So just let me know.
Yeah, definitely. I want to see your new books.
I downloaded a bunch of them. They're all on my TBR list right now because there was a lot of different ones. I'm like, oh, that looks cool. That looks cool. That looks mm-hmm. cool. But what happens is because I read so much for this pod and for mm-hmm. research for that when I'm reading for my personal self, I'm going pure escapism. You know, I'm doing that more, you know, I think I'm on reading about space pirates or something right now.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my thing, but I do have them downloaded. And I am super interested because I kind of started scanning the one and then I set it down and I'm like, I'm definitely coming back to it. So I got it bookmarked and I like what you're doing. I like what I read.
Yeah. For sure. That is cool.
Yeah. Tanya, where can people find us?
On all the socials, and we have stuff on Redbubble and shirts from all the artists that do our artwork. So even if y'all don't like us, go get shirts from some of the artists that have done our artwork. And also on Big Cartel. We have buttons and stuff on Big Cartel. And that's it. Yeah. And all the podcast players, pretty much. And if we're not on one that you usually listen to, tell us and we'll get on there.
All right. Well, thanks again, John. And we'll be talking to you soon.
Yeah, thank you. I had a blast.
All right. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Appreciate it.
Bye, guys.
All right, bye. Bye, guys.
Bye.